This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to what is surely going to be a week in America. It's Monday, and I'm joined by Francesca Fiorentini. Welcome to the show, Francesca.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
Glad to have you here. Great day for you to join the show. We're going to go into it, a whole bunch of different aspects of what happened over the weekend, but I've never seen a weekend like that in my life.
No, especially the trying to get into Gucci and loot it. That I've never seen.
Mm-hmm. I found that to be the most offensive part of the weekend.
Oh, for sure.
And we'll be focusing our attention on today's show on chastising.
On luxury brands that have been defiled.
Exactly.
I'm starting a whole new blog about this.
Exactly.
A subreddit.
What are you going to call it?
I think I'm going to call it Looted Vuitton.
Oh, that was pretty good, and right off the bat, that's why she's a professional, people.
Monday.
Anyway, okay, so first edition of Looted Vuitton will be on the Damage Report today. So thank you everybody who's joining us. We're going to be talking about what happened over the weekend, and I'm just going to say, we're going to focus on the parts that matter, okay? Now, you might have been watching the news all morning and finding a whole bunch of, like, tutting about what some individuals who are not vested with the power of life and death by the state, what they have done. We're gonna focus on what really happened this weekend and what is likely to happen this week, because we do have some indication of that as well. For those of you who are already joining the chat and the stream, thank you for doing that. Please hit the like button if you haven't already, so that people know what's going on. If you want to chat along, if you want to tweet us at hashtag TDR Live, if you're on Twitch and want to leave a comment or send a super chat, we are here with you today, and we're gonna work through some of this, because this is an important moment, hopefully, of growth for America, and those moments are not always easy, and they don't have to be. So I'm just gonna say that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Francesca, why don't we launch into it? If you were following along with protests happening in cities across America, and in fact around the world, there were international protests I saw in Berlin and in France and in the UK and probably many other places as well, you probably noticed that videos started coming out of police brutalizing protesters, in some cases, clear instances of attempted murder. And in normal times, which these are not, any one of those videos would be something we would focus on this show to push back against injustice and, you know, state violence. We could do the next 6 months of shows on those videos. And so we've been put in a position where we can't focus on all of them. But thankfully, friend of the show, Jordan Yule, he put out a call for videos of this sort on a tweet. And that thread reached the thousands of replies of people sending him these sorts of material. He put together a mashup, and I want to share that with you now.
Oh, We got plenty of time here.
Are you okay?
I'm getting shot. I'm getting.
Katie, are you okay?
That's just the section that Jordan was able to cut down to 2 minutes, because that's the limit of what a video can be on Twitter. That could be hours long. And it shows cops. I saw a comment asking, where is this? Everywhere. All over the country. Every city. There are some places where I've seen cops, you know, sitting down with protesters and things like that. That's great. But the majority of the interactions appeared to be cops going out of their way to brutalize people. In many cases, just walking away. Doing what they had been ordered to do. There's a video of an old man with a cane who's just walking down the street, and a cop runs up and knocks him down. I don't even think he was involved in the protest. It was just some old man who happened to be on the street. And videos like this are everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it is a galvanizing moment. I think a lot of people who listen and watch to your show and TYT, maybe were out protesting, and chances are you were part of the largely and predominantly peaceful protest. That means unarmed, not lighting fires, with signs. And what police do is they say that's not okay. If you have, you can't exercise your First Amendment right if you are talking about Black human rights or income inequality or housing or any of the other issues that affect working class people. That's not okay. You will be corralled. You'll be maced. There was a child in Seattle who was maced to the face. Yeah. This is what a police state looks like. And I'm sorry, but we have one. And you will find that out very quickly when you take your outrage to the streets and you actually try to exercise again your First Amendment right, and you find that it is cut off, that it is brutalized, that it is shut down with the full force of a militarized police and a machinery that we haven't seen in 3 months leap to the defense of anyone when it comes to the pandemic, yep. When it comes to our economic rights and the fact that we're all struggling right now. And it's a politicizing moment. I would just say to everybody, like, as sad and horrible as it is, this is a moment for all of us. Let's sort of savor this. Let's write, talk, think, plan. This is that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, look, some people, again, it's that classic thing, the, you know, the devotion and attachment to tranquility rather than, you know, an actual positive peace that's equally distributed across the population. Some people are going to tut-tut about the fact that these people aren't, you know, I was going to say, like, peaceful, like just kneeling, but of course they try to do that, and they were disregarded and attacked brutally. Lives were destroyed literally over that. And so some people will say that and say, you know, why does this stuff have to be violent? And here's the thing. I mean, we showed you the violence. The violence almost universally was the cops. It's the people with all of the power going out of their way to attack people using clubs, using their non-lethal or less lethal weapons, which we'll get into that. Or the most common thing, we could have put together a montage just of this, just driving over people. Because if you are... they have been trained that apparently if you're a cop in your car and people briefly inconvenience you by being in the path, you get to just run over them. I saw cop cars going over people in cities across the country, and it just sickens me that you can have news shows. Like, I understand our standards for, like, Fox and Friends should be basically nothing. On Fox and Friends this morning, there were zero mentions of police violence at these protests. How do you have a show that pretends to care about reality? And that, by the way, is critical of executive power when a Democrat is in charge. That all of a sudden, cops just brutalizing people, stomping them in the streets to pretend that doesn't matter and that it didn't happen.
And proving their case. I mean, the brilliant and ridiculously ironic thing about these protests is that they're about George Floyd's murder, right? And they're about excessive force from police. And so what do they do to respond to that cry for stopping police violence? More police violence.
Yeah.
So it's this self-defeating industry, and it's really shameful. And it is shameful again that it takes violence, or, you know, instigated by police, a broken window to get national news coverage for 48 hours or more straight, when we should be talking about police brutality and violence against Black Americans every single week, every single day. But hell, I'll give them a week, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I want to go to another video. This is coming from L.A. Take a look. This is on, I think, 3rd in Hollywood. Cops will argue that every violent action that they had to take was 100% necessary. I want you to see this video of the coordinated assault on people who are just walking away from an area they've been told to leave. So I know that, you know, comparisons to Handmaid's Tale happen all the time these days, but that is almost exactly like a scene out of it. Now, yes, they were using less lethal weapons, but we're going to show you what those less lethal weapons can do. They massed as a group, a call was put out to charge, and they began charging at unarmed protesters who were moving the opposite direction, firing their weapon as they did it indiscriminately. Not one individual assaulted us, threw a Molotov cocktail, we had to take him down, whatever excuse they might use. It was just begin firing, hit people with these rubber bullets, disperse the crowd. It was like, that was a wartime effort you saw there, a charge on an area.
You know, I mean, yeah, we like to imagine this happens elsewhere, and it doesn't. It happens in the U.S., and we still call ourselves a democracy. And I would like us to imagine, you know, if we can hold out some hope for what democracy might actually look like one day, which is that police would be protecting protesters. Now, I don't mean they have to agree with them, but I mean marshaling, right? In all of these protests, in a lot of protests, if folks have been to them, there's always marshals that come from the organizations themselves because they protect the line. They make sure people are, like, you know, not walking out of it so they won't get arrested accidentally. There are National Lawyers Guild volunteers. There's a huge amount of machinery from activists because they know they get brutalized. I'm not sure how much that was able to be activated this weekend. But once again, like, there are countries where actually the right to protest is protected, and police will make sure that, yeah, if there's anything that's out of hand, people aren't getting stomped on or trampled, or if they need water, whatever. No, we have police officers like grabbing activists' water, stealing their water,
yep.
And back to the rubber bullets, destroying their water. The other, back to the rubber bullets, National Guard in Minneapolis, I'm sure folks have seen this video, enforcing the curfew. So they're walking down the middle of the road, the National Guard, and folks are filming them from their porches, from their property. Mm-hmm. And you hear an officer, whomever, say, "Light them up." Some straight up Iraq, Afghanistan, war on terror language. Light them up. And they begin spraying rubber bullets at people standing in their own homes.
Standing in their homes. Like, they're told to go to their homes, they go to their homes, and they start attacking them in their homes.
And right, because they have to be inside.
Exactly. And it can be so casual. I saw a video of a Vice correspondent who was face down on the pavement, holding up his press badge above his head. Cops walking past him. One cop walks up next to him, looking around, just points his thing of tear gas at him or pepper spray and shoots him right in the face with it on the ground. And then just walks off. Doesn't even care. I saw another. It was there was one of their, like, little wagons where they all, you know, all the cops are hanging off the sides. Bunch of cops, maybe 15 or whatever, on this one vehicle, and someone's filming from the sidewalk with a thing maybe 20 yards away, and all the cops are armed, and one of the cops just points his gun casually at the crowd, fires. Like, they're not trying to disperse the crowd. The people filming are not doing anything. Just points his gun, fires off a rubber bullet, hits the guy's phone, you can see it because that's the video, and shatters it, spraying glass and metal at the guy.
And
just totally casual violence.
Yet the president calls the protesters thugs. Interesting.
Exactly. And by the way, so we've been talking about the rubber bullets. We're supposed to pretend that, oh, it's rubber bullets, so it's fine. You can shoot people however you want. I want to alert you, this is brutal. But one of the individuals who was hit by a rubber bullet tweeted, and you can see the gore. Now, she was lucky that that hit her on her forehead and only did a terrible amount of damage. A couple inches down and she would have lost her eye, as multiple people have through the course of this weekend's protests. Yep. This is what their non-lethal weapons do.
Well, and they're also using them wrong. I mean, I absolutely do not believe in these non-lethal weapons at all. At this point, I don't believe that police officers should be armed with guns or these weapons. No, but they're using them wrong. You're supposed to aim a rubber bullet at the ground and then it bounces back. That's the sort of the idea, right? And it hits people in the legs. Like, you know, I mean, at this point you're like, man, if all the police officers who've gunned down, you know, an unarmed black person were using rubber bullets, maybe we'd be in a better place then. Mm-hmm. But I actually think it's really interesting that, and you know, that all folks, you know, people who are in solidarity with the black community are now getting a taste of what the black community faces on a daily basis, because protest is criminalized the same way that blackness and poverty are also criminalized.
Yeah. Yeah. They should know how to use them. They shouldn't be able to use them, but if they're going to use them, they should know how to use them. But they're not, like, we didn't spend billions of dollars arming these people up like they're patrol in Fallujah for them to not use the weapons. And many people have pointed out, there was one tweet, like, why does every cop across the country look like an Avenger? And we had nurses fighting coronavirus with trash bags as protective equipment. Like, we had no resources to give to help out. No coordination, no aid. But all of a sudden, man, they are ready to defend Beverly Hills.
There you go. We have the money. I mean, in some, the silver lining is, hey, we've got masks. They're there. They're just going to the wrong people. So, you know, redistribute it. And that's why, once again, budgets are coming in. I know the city of LA has its budget due today, and the police budget doubles budgets for anything else. So that's on us to tweet at, call, you know, and take action, because, yeah, the money's there, y'all. Money's been there. I know this whole time we've been like, wait a minute, aren't we a first world country? Yeah, it just goes into our military.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, again, on the non-lethal weapons, like, we just take it as, oh, yeah, no, you use tear gas. That's just what you do. No, you internationally, you can't use tear gas.
Yeah.
It's a war crime because it's a chemical weapon. But we are more lenient on weapons deployed against our own citizens than we would be internationally. Although, to be fair, I have a feeling Donald Trump would not care about those international prohibitions either. And there are also lies going around that I think it was in San Diego, it might have been, they said that the protesters had leaf blowers loaded with bleach to spray on the cops, when everyone knows that the leaf blowers are used to disperse the tear gas to protect the people in the crowd. You know, are you familiar with Shivala Madlina? She, co-host of my docuseries, she has impaired vision in one eye because of tear gas that was deployed against her when she was doing reporting in Israel. It is less lethal. Still a weapon. Still can maim people. Still can kill people. People have been killed by rubber bullets. You know, and hold on to your butts, because we're like a couple days into this thing.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
it wasn't just the police that were trying to turn their vehicles into deadly weapons throughout the weekend. You probably also saw this when a tanker truck on a highway came this close to killing potentially dozens of people.
Right, okay. So Eric Chaloux, once again, on the ground. And Eric, we are looking at the people, thousands there on the ground.
What's happening right now?
They're moving across. What's going on?
I'm not certain what
we're looking at
here. Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
A giant...
oh, my gosh.
This is very dangerous.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is bad.
This road was supposed to be blocked off. The protesters were peacefully blocking the highway. We don't know exactly what happened. It appears that it went around the barricade so that it could go onto the highway. And that person hit the gas, seeing in front of him hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of protesters. Now, he was dragged out of the vehicle, and thankfully, no one was hurt other than the driver, who has now been arrested, because that driver, like, that driver and the police who are just running in, like, running their vehicles into crowds, that's ISIS's tactic internationally over the past few years. They have learned it from international terrorists to use their weapon. Like that guy in the tanker, that's what he was trying to do. He was willing, when he stepped on the gas, to potentially kill hundreds of people.
And it's happened, right? Unite the Right rally and yeah. Heather Heyer being mowed down by a white supremacist in his car. It's happened before.
Yeah, it has. Now, we're gonna turn to some other aspects on this in a little bit. I did want to let you know, though, that in addition to all the violence that you saw there, we also have at least, and this is the most initial of estimates, 4,100 people arrested over the past few days, including nearly 1,000 in L.A., over 700 in New York. I mean, these numbers are probably nothing compared to the actual number, but there are organizations that you can support that are providing bail and lawyers, in some cases, working pro bono to help out these individuals. That is one way that you can potentially help, if you would like. Okay, now let's see what people are saying. Wilson B., thank you for your super chat. Alleycat K. says, have you seen the newest dig by Barbara Streisand? No, is it a comment about this? I'm not actually familiar with that. I apologize.
Must look up.
I will. Let's see what Barbara
Streisand.
The dig
by Barbara Streisand.
I hope it's in song form. I don't know. I don't see it. Feel free to let us know more. Virtual fundraiser for Joe Biden? I assume that's not what it is. But maybe. Gina Jones says, hope you're doing well and watching on both YouTube and Twitch. Thank you, Gina. Knowledge Gizmo says, hold our leaders accountable. No talk. Action. Hashtag BLM. Karanig says, happy Pride Month. Happy Pride Month, everyone. Again, saw its beginnings in a riot. Because sometimes that is what is required for change to come. Chubtoad says, we need 2+ hours of TDR today, please. I can't necessarily promise that. I'm going to be doing interviews following the show, but we'll see what we can do. Emily Phillips says, Veronica Rodriguez, a black EMT in Minneapolis, died this morning in ICU from police brutality after providing aid to protesters. Say her name. Yes, so we are beginning to see some individuals who have been killed. There was a pregnant woman who was, I think, hit by a car and was killed, I believe, by police. Some of these, we don't have the details necessarily, but you're going to see more of this. Amanda says, some of that luxury crap costs more than my rent. Yes. Charlie says, happy birthday, Zane. Zane had his birthday over the weekend. Happy birthday, Zane. And let's see. Jess Ortega, hashtag TDR Live, said, I keep seeing videos where I can't tell who is local PD and who's the guard called in. It's terrifying. Patrick Maney says, wow, that video was powerful. It shows the cops starting the violence against people that are showing no aggressiveness. Everyone should see that video, as well as many, many others. And then, unfortunately, many of these incidents will be lost in the flood, honestly. But yeah, and we're seeing, like, we're not even taking time out to do a full story about the fact that a guy took a machete and tried to kill protesters and was beaten. The guy with his bow.
Bow, oh, wow.
Like, he's been arrested, thankfully, at the very least. And not to mention all of the evidence that there have been, you know, there are black protest organizers trying to get some white protesters to stop doing things that are going to be taken out not on those individuals. There's clear cases of cops, it seems like, planting and setting fires to cars, starting fires, weird things with bricks being planted in locations. There's so much stuff going on. There seems to be some evidence that InfoWars set fire to a homeless man's belongings and then filmed it to say that the protesters have been doing that. A lot of this, it's impossible to verify for sure, but the entire thing is just a disgusting, tragic mess, made worse by virtually everyone in a position to make it better. You can be forgiven for forgetting that we actually have a president and a government. It hasn't seemed like that for some time, but as the situation in America has gotten worse and worse, we do technically have a president. He has briefly, over the past few days, stuck his head up to comment on what was going on. But far from being any kind of unifier, he's only made it worse. Donald Trump tweeted back on May 30th, "Great job last night at the White House by the U.S. Secret Service. They were not only totally professional, but very cool. I was inside, watching every move, and couldn't have felt more safe." Well, that's what's important. "They let the protesters scream and rant as much as they wanted, but whenever someone got too frisky or out of line," that's how he speaks about people organizing to push for their rights, "they would quickly come down on them hard, didn't know what hit them," saying at some point, "if they had breached the fence, they would have been greeted by the most vicious dogs and most ominous weapons I have ever seen. That's when people would have been really badly hurt, at least." Something he talks about as if he is thirsty for it, not as, a tragedy to be avoided. So he was sitting in the White House as protests were going on around it, and threatening to unleash the most ominous weapons. I'm sure in a few hours he's going to pretend that he wasn't talking about killing the protesters, and right-wing media is going to pretend that they don't understand why anyone thought that's what he was implying. But that's what he's doing. When the looting starts, the shooting starts, wasn't clear enough, he's talking about letting loose dogs on people pushing for civil rights and unleashing military weapons on them.
Yeah, he's such a classless nerd, you know? He's just a nerd for violence and mayhem. That's what he's doing. That's all. He's just like a fanboy of people being brutalized, and he's live tweeting it from the safety and comfort of the White House.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm really happy that people have taken these demonstrations to the White House.
Yes.
Because he is also the emblem of the kind of white supremacist mentality that unfortunately undergirds a lot of police departments in this country and drives the dehumanization of Black Americans when they are confronted by police on some really stupid, dumb thing, like a $20 counterfeit, right?
Exactly.
And so, we should be taking this fight to all of our elected officials and especially to the president.
Exactly. I guess, although I have tried, I've kept 1% of my brain functioning constantly from the very beginning of his term, just focused on don't allow yourself to allow things to now seem normal that should not be. But even I, it's like, oh yeah, no, the president is tweeting that he might start firing on protesters. And that's the 10th biggest story of the weekend, yeah, is that he's doing that. Unleash the dogs, unleash the weapons. He's happy and sitting there. And honestly, the reason that can be a little bit normalized is because the more ominous thing for me is watching more and more people, regular Trump supporters, people, again, in the center who have a greater devotion to things being sort of quiet and seeming normal rather than being just, and people in the media who have apparently decided, fascist police state where we're murdering people in the streets. There are worse things, I guess. And isn't it a quick turn from right-wing media spent the last 2 months pretending that, like, dictators in office are taking away our rights, they're trampling our rights, it's a police state in Michigan, to immediately, no, cops should be killing people. They should really start shooting protesters in the streets. That was like a turn on a dime there. And not even commented on by the people making the turning.
Yeah. I mean, I would just ask everyone who is upset at some of the property destruction or fire being started or some of the minority of protesters who turned and became violent with or without infiltrators, because we know that is real, both from the police side and potentially from the extreme right. But ask yourself, who has more of a responsibility right now to be peaceful, right? Is it the police? Is it the president? Or is it someone who's out of work who has not gotten a $1,200 stimulus check, or even with that can't make rent, whose landlord is bothering them to make payment, who doesn't have health care. Like, who has the responsibility to keep the peace? Who has the responsibility to show restraint right now? I'm going to go with the people whose tax dollars we fund, right? I'm going to go with the police. I'm going to go with the president. So if you're more upset at someone lighting fire to an Adidas store or a palm tree, you know, than you are about the president inciting violence, that's on you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the media, like, it's been so sad. There's so many parts of this to talk about, but the CNN has been like, the media, by the way, is being targeted in a way that many of these reporters who are being attacked by cops on the streets have said they've reported from war zones around the world and not been targeted in this way, as if by design they are being attacked, and that's probably what it is. But even then, like, CNN's chyrons and headlines are all looters and stuff like you guys are on the streets. You see the violence being directed at these protesters, and still their knee-jerk reaction is to side with the narrative of those in power trying to crush this rebellion. And so, yeah, that's what we're seeing.
And it makes sense. I mean, we all know that, you know, after in the later years of the Obama administration, there was investigations opened into local police departments from the Justice Department that was scrapped. And then there also was sort of the blocking of new weaponry going to police departments because all of the stuff that we manufacture to be used abroad eventually comes back home to roost. All mm-hmm. that violence and militarization comes back to our communities. And of course, the Trump administration said, nope, game on. We're not blocking any of those shipments of, you know, whatever lethal / non-lethal, you know, I don't know, poop your pants gun, because there's a poop your pants gun.
There is. There
or it's
is.
Like a sound. Like, yeah. Whichever one of those, like, we want it, right? So, again, all of these things and struggles are connected. And when I say we're giving too much to the military, I'm including the police.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the investigations that have been going on for a long time into the infiltration or just open acceptance of white supremacists in police departments and the military is something that, as a country, we, like, saw the news and we're like, that's probably fine. Let's not worry about that. That's not going to cause issues later on, and of course, continues to. And you can see that. I mean, we can go quickly to... That's a police officer covering the protest, flashing a white power symbol. But as I tweeted, probably doing it ironically. It's probably just a joke. That's all.
Yeah, and when you're saying cops... everything's okay.
Oh, totally. And when the cops tear down the American flag and put up a flag of veneration of cops above all else, at least they're being clear about what it is they're defending at that point.
I mean, one other thing I was just going to mention is that we understand that there are very strong police unions that resist any kind of reform, and they have for years, and they should be targets of our pressure too, especially, for example, they resist things like mental health checks. Police officers saying, no, I don't need to check, you know. And I'm not saying that they're unfit to serve or anything, but imagine being a cop is hard. Yeah, it is hard. Wouldn't you think that a basic mental health check or like visiting a therapist regularly, having someone check in on you, that would be good. We would want that for the armed arbiters of justice who patrol our streets every day. But no, the police unions make sure that they don't get that. Just as I would say you should have a check on, hey, does this officer have white supremacist tendencies? Because that's not good. We should root that out. Yeah. But of course, I'm sure a union would be against that as well. Yeah. At least a police union.
Donald Trump was busy live tweeting what was going on. He's done literally nothing to solve the issues that are being protested about substantively. He's done nothing to try to bring people together. He's, of course, unable to do so. And in fact, physically unable to do so because he spent a portion of the weekend hiding in a bunker. Hundreds of protesters were gathering outside White House gates, shouting curses at him, throwing bricks and bottles in some cases. Nervous for his safety, Secret Service agents abruptly rushed the president to the underground bunker used in the past during terrorist attacks. Now, this, of course, was not a terrorist attack. It was justifiably outraged Americans outside of the gates, But this guy, the alpha male to end all alpha males, the macho man who literally plays the song Macho Man at his rallies, hid in the bunker. No word yet on whether he listened to Macho Man in the bunker, but that's where he was.
We can assume.
Alpha male.
This was like Trump's 9/11.
Yeah.
Trump's 9/11 is just people being rightfully mad at him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if he were capable of reading, he would have just continued reading a children's book as the towers went down. But that's not possible for him. So instead, he fled down to a bunker that I'm going to assume was catered by McDonald's. And so what I'm interested in is what is the feeling in the White House about what he should do? Because, I mean, we had he almost took us to war in Iran. Then there was a pandemic, a death toll of 103,000 and counting, 40 million unemployed. Now there are protests around the country. Seems like maybe at some point he would do something. Well, we have some word from inside the administration of what he's thinking. Trump and some of his advisors calculated that he should not speak to the nation because he had nothing new to say and had no tangible policy or action to announce yet, according to a senior administration official. Evidently not feeling an urgent motivation Sunday to try to bring people together, he stayed silent. He later yelled, I'm assuming about the reports that he was in the bunker. He tweeted, fake news. There's no other details, so I can't say for sure that's why. But he did add, helpfully, law and order. I don't know exactly what that's supposed to mean. He also retweeted people, including one tweet from whoever this is, saying this isn't going to stop until the good guys are willing to use overwhelming force against the bad guys.
What?
The president retweeted that because he apparently agrees with that.
Who are the good guys again? I'm lost.
I'm assuming it's the people running over protesters. If I had to guess, that's who I think the good guys are. We have a little bit from Cecilia Vega on ABC this week, I believe this morning, sort of talks inside of the White House about what he might do.
Yeah, George, we're hearing that there's growing divide inside the West Wing among top aides. You've got these two camps on one side, among others, Jared Kushner, who are wondering what the political benefit is of having the president address the nation from the Oval Office. They wonder whether this will do more harm than good. Frankly, they know he's not a huge fan of giving the Oval Office address, that he's made mistakes in them in the past. The White House has had to kind of scramble to play cleanup on that. On the other hand, though, you've got others in the West Wing, including the chief of staff, Mark Meadows, who are strongly encouraging him to do this because they say that he could really appear to be a strong leader, to be a unifier, a healer at this time of great crisis in our country. And frankly, you know, there's a belief that this could help him with the African-American vote during an election year.
There's a strong feeling about that. Was it a feeling accompanied by a great deal of alcohol? Because how could you think that would be the outcome? It's not her. She's reporting on...
I know, but I don't blame her for reporting on that, but the way she said it gave it just way too much
credence. Yeah.
That this is the time that he could really speak to the African-American community. Oh, man.
Can you imagine what that address is going to be like when it finally comes?
Of course. We know exactly what Antifa... The thugs.
We're going to get to Antifa. Don't worry. did you read, by the way, about his call with the brother of George Floyd?
And no, I did not.
The brother was saying, I was trying to get him to understand our concerns and he wouldn't let me speak. He just kept cutting me off. Like, and people don't remember. There's so many stories that people don't remember. One of our soldiers died in Africa 3 years ago, I think. And he got on a call with the widow. And the call ended with a public feud between him and the widow because he couldn't just call someone up and lend a little bit of empathy to the situation. You think he's going to unify people? And that the end result of his address is improved relations between Trump and the black community in America. Who's stupid enough to think that? It's got to be
Miller. You have to listen. Listening distinguishes humans from sociopaths, mm-hmm. right? Like, and so just, you know, is there, what can we all do in this horrible time? Listen, just generally listen, and especially, and F the president and all that, but like, listen to Black leadership, listen to Black-led organizations, Movement for Black Lives. What are they calling for? What are they asking? You know, but once again, everything Trump does is a beautiful example of what to never teach your children and what to teach them. And that is just listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like I'm just waiting for Biden to speak, and it's probably he's going to ruin it. But look, he has been going around the past couple of days and meeting with people, and that's the most I reasonably could expect from him. That's more than what you're getting out of Trump. I mean, we had the weekend, and it was obviously devastating in a number of different ways. The sheer brutality, constantly visible. What's going to come this week, I can't say for sure, but we do have some idea of what Donald Trump has been advising governors around the country to do. Here's the initial results of a call he had this morning with governors. President Trump apparently unloaded on them, saying, quote, "You have to dominate. If you don't dominate, you're wasting your time. They're going to run over you. You're going to look like a bunch of jerks. You have to dominate. Washington was under very good control, but we're going to have it under much more control. We're going to pull in thousands of people. You've got to arrest people. You have to track people. You have to put them in jail for 10 years and you'll never see this stuff again." So you have to, again, these are this is the conservatives, very cautious about government spying and overreach and executive power and all of that. Wants to track all these protesters and start locking people up for 10 years for protesting. Yep. Remember how many pardons has he given to people for like lying to the FBI and stuff like that? No, he thinks that protesters need to go to jail for a decade. That will teach them. That will solve this. So we have an idea of what his unifying blueprint looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like, hey, look at North Korea. Look at Egypt. You know, why can't we be more like them? He wishes that that the shred of democracy that we still hold on to, that idea, he wishes we would have just obliterate that forever. Mm-hmm. And I really think that this is a moment, once again, and a lesson for us that this country could head in that direction. And we're at this crossroads right now. And I think what we're seeing right now is obviously, once again, how horribly unfairly Black Americans are treated by the police in this country and how they are criminalized. Take that and just expand it to all people, right? And double it. Obviously, if we are in an actual dictatorship, you know, Black Americans will still be the ones suffering the brunt of it. But he wants more militarism, not less.
Yeah.
And I think this is, this is just a crossroads for us to really think about, hey, with 4 more years, maybe he could actually get it. Maybe he could do it.
Yeah, if he didn't have to worry about running for re-election, if he has apparently decided that his only way to win re-election is to turn out 99% of his base by letting them know explicitly that he is in favor of race-based mass murder, effectively.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, we're not supposed to say that. We're supposed to be polite and pretend that that's not what the movement is, that it is not entirely founded on white supremacy, but that's what it is. Or at the very least, that's what he thinks it is. Look at what he's doing. Look at what he's saying. You can't draw any other conclusion than that. And so I guess looking ahead, because the curfews are continuing, the protests are going to continue. I'm curious, Francesca, I mean, what do you think? What is the situation going to be by the time we do our show together next Monday? Will we have had, you know, militia members open fire on a crowd? Will we have a dozen, two dozen people who've been killed by police? You know, by that point, we already have a few.
God, I really hope not. But I do think that protests will continue, and not just petering off, you know, random looting, but real nonviolent protests that, again, have been the majority of the things we've seen. And those are going to continue. I know the Movement for Black Lives is calling for a week of action. I think that action will absolutely continue. I think you're going to see the rubber hitting the road. We are at a moment, especially because of this pandemic, especially because we see the machinery of this police state and we see the money that is there. We're at this, and it's an election year.
Mm-hmm.
We are at a crossroads. This is a moment where I actually think we could get, let's be real, even the most minimal police reform would be good, would be better. Even just protection of peaceful protesters would be good. One city, All right. I mean, yes, I want the whole pie. I feel you when I hear everyone who's like, nah, shut it all down. But we're at a moment. I think there is a real opening here. No matter what happens, in November, God, I can't even say that. No, it definitely matters what happens in November. But I do hope that in a week, there is continued pressure on police departments to actually make some real reforms and to arrest the three officers who were implicated in this murder. Yeah. This is what the Minneapolis protesters are demanding and what people around the world are demanding. But what about you? What do you think?
I mean, look, I'm very worried that the next time the tanker is going to go through the crowd. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that if the cops had virtually no restraint a day or two into the protests, knowing that they're being filmed, that's the thing we always have to remember. They know that what they're doing is being filmed and they're still doing it after five more days of this. What are they going to do then? What restraint will be left after that? And in terms of the goals, I mean, it's not up to me. And, I would say we need to, in the same way that after, you know, like decades of civil strife and war, there will be, you know, Truth and Reconciliation committees set up for sort of a rebirth. I think that we need to finally acknowledge that the entire American philosophy on policing and law enforcement has been abusive and broken from the very beginning. Broken from the point of view of the people who are abused, not from the system. It's set up and it's worked very well from their point of view. And it needs to be wound down and restarted, learning lessons from policing and law enforcement in countries around the world that don't have these sorts of problems, that don't militarize their police and load them up in Humvees and, you know, ARs and things like that. You know, if current cops can pass the mental health checks and if they're not tied to white supremacist organizations and things like that, then they can be retrained and they can join. That's what we should be aiming for, is a fundamental rebooting of law enforcement in America. Because the thing is, if we don't get that, then maybe we'll see a slight reduction in violence. But we know what these police departments are like. We know their ability and capacity to protect their own and to fight against any reforms.
I love that. I think a rebooting of the police is a really, really good way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. I hope.
Start anew.
Donald Trump is striking out against who he thinks is behind all of the chaos around the country, announcing over the weekend that the United States of America will be designated Antifa as a capital T terrorist, capital O organization, in a tweet that is technically a sentence, but means nothing. It has meaning, and that meaning is ominous, but it means absolutely nothing to designate Antifa as a terrorist organization. Francesca, feel free to describe some of the reasons why that makes no sense.
I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, can he do that? Maybe he can. I do know that when you designate someone a terrorist, you can then charge them and sentence them to many, many more years in prison. Mm-hmm. I know that some environmentalists who have taken to property destruction in the past have been sentenced to like 30 years in prison because they burned down like a dealership, a car dealership, did not hurt anybody. So when you start to add the label terrorist, yeah, I mean, I think it is significant.
Yeah.
As obviously as random and as a decision that, as I'm sure that was, just spur of the moment made on Twitter.
How many minutes before he hit send do you think he had the thought to do it? Do you think he thought about it for 5 minutes?
No, but I do think there's a little bit of it. Like, I would love to get access to the group chats where Trump's like, I'm doing it. 5, 4, 3.
That would be something. a few issues with Antifa being a terrorist organization. It's not an organization.
Right.
It doesn't have a membership. It doesn't have a leadership. It doesn't have buildings you can raid. Like, what do right-wingers, first of all, how do they live with themselves? But what do they think is happening right now? That, like, Antifa like the evacuation of Hoth. They're like getting all their equipment together and like dispersing. It's not an organization.
No.
It's just people who are against fascism and believe in direct action. The vast, vast majority of which probably don't know more than a couple of people who are similarly ideologically inclined.
That's a very good point.
It's just people who are against fascism. Some probably have the label anti-fascist, you know, in their mind. Many are just people who are justifiably against fascism. It doesn't mean anything.
There is, yeah, exactly.
Because exactly. Because it is by its very nature such an amorphous thing, that is almost convenient for them. Because if Antifa doesn't have a membership, then anyone can be Antifa. And
if they have
guarantee
a mask on.
Exactly, if they have a mask.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
We're all wearing masks.
By the way, everyone should identify as being against fascism. If you do not, I have significant problems with you. But prepare, if you protest, to be an official member of Antifa. Because they are going, if this goes beyond it being a tweet, the way it will go beyond that is to be deployed against anyone and everyone that they want to lock up. Or send to Gitmo or whatever. And their right wingers salivating right now over the possibility of protesters being sent to Gitmo. Literally saying that.
I just say, like, I definitely don't, I don't condone, and I'm not like into every tactic that the amalgamous sort of Antifa protesters like take up at every protest. But I will say that Antifa has been, and not the organization, but people who go out, you know, to the streets and, you know, whatever, black clad, et cetera, they've been on the front lines against white supremacist organizing for like 40 years now, 30, mm-hmm. like since like the, not maybe not that long, but like for decades, they have been there at every time some right, extreme right wing organization or Nazi organization wants to parade or have a protest or whatever it is. Antifa's usually the ones who are there. Now, we're more used to like coming out against coming out against fascism now under Trump because of things like Unite the Right and because of the ways that that fascism has been emboldened and those Nazi organizations have been emboldened and actually come out from their whatever man caves under their mom's homes, right? But like Antifa has been there. So I would just like a little bit of a hats off to Antifa for kind of having their finger on the pulse of where these white supremacist organizations are and standing up to them. And also, I just want to clarify, they're not all white boys, all right? And that's another misconception, is that Antifa and the people who like do all these tactics and believe in direct action, that they're all like white boys, and mm-hmm. they're not, all right? And so just out of respect to them, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. No one should be erased, especially when they're trying to protect our freedoms. Mm-hmm. One more problem with the tweet is ACLU pointed out terrorism is an inherently political label, easily abused and misused. We know that. Let's be clear. There is no legal authority for designating a domestic group as a terrorist organization. Any such designation would raise significant due process and First Amendment concerns. As many people have pointed out, the KKK is not designated as a terrorist organization. You know, militias that have blown up federal buildings and stuff like that, or murdered, abortion doctors have not been labeled as terrorist organizations, even though they use the tactics of it. And this is not a situation where I've seen some people tweeting, well, then they should also designate the KKK. No, we don't designate these domestic organizations as terror organizations. As of right now, there is no legal way to do that. So let's bear that in mind. Another way that it's nonsensical, but also dangerous. You might have remembered Memorial Day weekend, when people in the Lake of the Ozarks just had themselves a nice party, a pool party, and some of us party crashers, we were worried that that might have consequences, and it might result in people getting coronavirus, because the people doing the partying weren't socially distancing, they weren't wearing masks, and it turned out, lurking amongst them were people who were positive for coronavirus. News is now reporting a person who partied in the Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri area on Memorial Day weekend has tested positive for coronavirus and was possibly infectious over the holiday weekend. The Boone County resident visited multiple bars on May 24th and 25th, according to the Camden County Health Department. They developed illness on Sunday and were possibly infectious before them. The person, who was not identified, also went to Shady Gators and Lazy Gators, those are different places, and Buffalo Wild Wings, because of course. So this person was not only sick potentially with coronavirus at that point, but was also really getting around, going
to multiple
bars, like seriously, and then coming back to Shady Gators later on. And I get it. It sounds fun. But if you were at one of those places, you need to know that there were potentially people there and potentially spreading coronavirus. This is not purely hypothetical anymore. The sickness is coming from inside the room.
Yeah.
I doubt you're surprised. Honestly.
Not surprised at all. I'm just like, of course, we all knew that was going to happen. And I get it. I think we're going to start to see this summer, people who want to go to pool parties, they want to hang, they want to pretend. And no matter what your political leanings are, you're going to want to pretend that everything is okay. And it's still not. This virus is still out there. It's still killing people. It's still asymptomatic.
Yep.
And I also think we're going to see, I mean, like, there's part of me that's like, I get why you want to go to a pool party. You're going to have to deal with a baby pool in, you know, your front yard for the time being. You can't go out. And yeah, they're going to be like celebrities in private jets going to their like beach vacations. You can't do that. Sorry. Mm-hmm. You're not a millionaire. And once again, yeah, income inequality is a problem. Get yourself a baby pool.
Exactly. Yeah. So look, those people, like we said, we were scared at the time, didn't have masks, weren't socially distancing. I just want to briefly go back to this photo has been spread quite a bit, 150,000 retweets from the protests over the weekend of these protesters marching past this group having brunch. And as many people noticed immediately, the protesters are virtually all, I think, all wearing masks. The people at brunch, none of them are. And yeah, that's something that I've definitely noticed, that one of the ways that right wingers have tried to disregard them is saying like, oh, you say you care about coronavirus and now you're out in the streets. Virtually all of them are taking it seriously, wearing masks. Yeah, sometimes they can't socially distance, totally true, but they are wearing the masks, which is more than can be said for not only the anti-lockdown protesters from a few weeks ago, but lots of people just going around today, including cops not wearing masks, by the way. Sometimes gas masks for the chemical weapons they're deploying. And let's also mention just briefly, you might remember from about 2 weeks ago when it was announced that Donald Trump was going to be recalling West Point cadets so that he could give a speech to them on June 13th. And when that news was announced, people were worried, well, this seems like a horrible time for you to pack halls with West Point cadets and potentially spread coronavirus amongst them. We now find out that 16 West Point cadets ahead of that speech have tested positive for COVID-19. They're back on campus for that speech, which will come up in 2 weeks. We have, in addition, 71 or more of the 5,000 faculty, staff, and civilians have also tested positive. So, like, we don't do a lot of updates of this sort, and I'm not one of the people who generally is a big fan of telling you so. But in both of these cases, yeah, the concerns were justified. And the potential vectors for coronavirus to continue to be spread are still out there. Obviously, we've got significant problems that we're dealing with in this country. But, you know, like, hundreds, if not more than 1,000 people are dying every day from coronavirus still. So just bear that in mind. That problem has not gone away just because we have other problems as well. Excited to welcome back to the program the co-founder of RootsAction.org and national coordinator for the 2016 Bernie Delegates Network and coordinator for the 2020 as well, Norman Solomon. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks, John.
Glad to have you here. Hoping to, you know, hear a little bit about the strategy going forward that can perhaps provide a little bit of optimism. But I know that you, as I said, you're the coordinator for the relaunched Bernie Delegates Network, launched just a little bit more than a month ago, or 2 months ago, I guess, at this point. So tell me a little bit about the launch, the goal of the group, sort of the mission going forward.
Well, history is in 2016, independently, a lot of Bernie Delegates coalesced around the network. We were active at the convention before it and really raising issues. For instance, we had a one delegate, one vote survey, and we punched up that Medicare for All back in 2016 was tops in terms of concerns, as well as stopping the corporate-friendly trade pact TPP. In the 2019, we relaunched, anticipating what was coming up. RootsAction.org, together with Progressive Democrats of America and Our Revolution, began it well over a year ago. And now we've launched, those three organizations have relaunched a 2020 Bernie Delegates Network. What's it all about? Well, We need independent voices. We need voices that are willing and able to speak out, not only at the convention, but before and after, who really represent grassroots support for Bernie. And, you know, as it said, you can suspend a campaign, but not the movements behind it.
Exactly. And we're assuming that, I mean, by the time all's said and done, he's going to have a significant number of delegates that theoretically could push for these sorts of changes, right?
Yeah, as we speak, there are, more than a dozen primaries still to go. And it's a sort of unusual situation where Bernie suspended his campaign. He said he was still seeking delegates. And the reality is that there are grassroots groups that are carrying it forward, certainly more than the campaign itself. Our Revolution, Roots Action, Progressive Democrats of America, a new group that is called Once Again PAC that I'm part of, and Roots Action, as well as PDA is part of, a group called People for Bernie. Well, it's all a bunch of groups, but what it really comes down to is grassroots insistence that we can get a lot more delegates, that it's meaningful for people to vote for Bernie against the neoliberal policies that Biden represents. And we've seen that happen. You know, John, just in the last week or so, Oregon, about 20% voting for Bernie. Mm-hmm. Hawaii, more than one third, I mean, close to 40%. Voting for Bernie just last week rather than voting for Biden. And you know, it's sort of extraordinary. Here you have Bernie, who has bowed out of the race, essentially endorses his opponent. And yet you have almost 2 out of 5 voters in Hawaii saying we still are voting for Bernie.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I can say personally, you know, I'm in California, so I was able to vote for Bernie in California. If like, you know, as typically the case, California had happened later in the primary schedule, I still would have voted for Bernie. I think many people see it as not only their right to do that, but, you know, sort of a privilege of having supported this person for so long. In some cases, you know, in terms of money, in terms of activism, they feel like that's what they should be able to do. And I'm glad that they can. What I'm curious about is in terms of the strategy, this time, as opposed to 2016, in terms of the issues you're going to be focusing on, is there any significant difference between the two? Are there any issues where you feel like less pressure is needed, that perhaps Biden is likely to be better on these issues? Or is it still largely a similar sort of platform that will be pushed for?
Well, the personalities are different. It's hard to see any programmatic major differences between Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, sorry to say. I think the dynamics, of course, are different. We have fewer delegates, but at the same time, and I should have mentioned, because of the votes that are still coming in for Bernie, we're going to get over a crucial threshold, which according to the DNC rules, if you have over 25% of the total delegates, you can push resolutions to the floor. And that also goes to party rules. And I should emphasize, John, that really it's because of activism from the grassroots and really anger that we didn't have this nonsense of superdelegates rearing its ugly head throughout the last year and a half. You know, back 2015-16, we had crawls across the bottom of cable TV. Hillary Clinton was ahead by hundreds of delegates, which is to say superdelegates, before a single vote had been cast in Iowa or New Hampshire or anywhere else.
Yeah.
That didn't happen this time, only because people raised hell in 2017 and 18 and got some reform so that the media and everybody knew on the first ballot superdelegates were irrelevant. Well, that's not baked into the cake permanently. It's not in the charter. So we're going to have to fight to make sure that we don't have a resurgence of superdelegate power. We're also going to have to fight for Medicare for all, for a Green New Deal, for ending all student debt, for ending the wars. And obviously, that's not where Biden's at. But I should say that really, we've got to defeat Trump. That's part of the underlying reality. And right now, we should be pressuring as well to not have a neoliberal vice president. I mean, Jesse Jackson said it very well at the 1988 Democratic Party convention. He said, it takes two wings to fly. And a lot of the neoliberals who are running the Biden campaign seem to think you can fly with two right wings of the party. It's just going to crash and burn unless we see, for one thing, a decent VP person on the ticket, the only one being touted who I would call decent, is Elizabeth Warren. So this is a fight that needs to be waged, and the more pressure we can bring to bear through the delegates in other ways, the better.
Are there any other names that are not currently being looked at that you think would fill that role well?
Oh, there's a lot. You know, Ro Khanna, Bernie Sanders himself, Barbara Lee, when you look at what's touted as even anywhere in the ballpark, unfortunately, none of those folks or of their quality are in there. And, you know, Elizabeth Warren at least is hated by Wall Street for good reasons. And so she would begin to balance the ticket, especially because, let's face it, it's not only his age, but his mental condition indicates that at most Biden would be a one-term president, if that. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm also curious, especially since you're involved right now and you were in 2016 as well, there is certainly the possibility that we will not have a physical convention. I know that Trump is pushing for one. He wants to just pretend that, you know, it's 1960 or whatever. But there's entirely a chance that this might be purely virtual. Does that change the way that you're organizing or the way that certain resolutions will be pushed in any significant way?
Well, it really empowers, in a sense, a lot of organizations that are largely reliant on and have strengths online. And that's certainly true of Our Revolution, true of Roots Action, other groups that want to bring pressure and organizing to bear. I think it would be completely irresponsible for the DNC to try to put 50,000 or 10,000 people in a modified arena. And all the public health indices tell us that that would just cause a lot of suffering and death as a result. And there's got to be a lot of insistence on the Democratic Party that it not try to sort of play a game of pandemic chicken with the unhinged Trump Republican Party and try to match them in terms of some kind of on the ground extravaganza. But ultimately, it comes down to organizing. And if we don't have something in Milwaukee, the same imperatives apply. We just cannot fold up our tent at any point in this current history in real time. We've got to insist that these issues be fought for and fought for across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. And a worst case scenario would see seeing these delegates, including the Bernie delegates, being exposed to harm simply to be able to show up. It looks like at this point, while Biden took a little while to seem to take the pandemic's effect on the ability to organize seriously, that lagged a bit, he does seem to be taking it seriously now. And so I hope that he will not be pushing for some sort of unnecessary and ahead of its time push for that sort of thing. But I want to thank you for joining us and laying out the strategy going forward. Hopefully we can talk again as you've coordinated with more delegates before the convention starts and see how that's going to shake out in real time. And so, Norman Solomon, thank you, as always, for what you're doing, and I appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.